Welcome to a Monday edition of the Soccer Central podcast. I'm John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet. Hope you're enjoying the summer wherever you are, and that it includes watching plenty of Major League Soccer. In the second half of the show, we'll turn our attention to the North American Soccer League, and specifically the Ottawa Fury. Chris Hoffley, beat reporter for the Ottawa Sun, will stop by to chat about the Fury's inaugural NASL campaign, how they're doing, and how the city has embraced the team. Before that, though, I'm pleased to welcome back to the show Kurt Larson. Kurt covers TFC for the Toronto Sun and has taken time out of his busy schedule to talk to Soccer Central and joins us now. Kurt, how are you doing, man?
Good. How's it going, John?
Good. So your general thoughts on TFC's 2-1 loss to Sporting Kansas City at BMO Field on the weekend. Not a bad performance considering they were missing Defoe, Caldwell, and Bloom.
Yeah, I thought it was a sign, you know, a positive sign overall. It was maybe one of the best first halves or best halves we've seen TFC play. You know, easily could have gone 2 or 3 up after striking the post a few times. And we'll talk about the referees, of course, and a couple of the blown calls, if you will. But then again, you know, all the chances TFC had, and Jackson in particular, to really put the game out of reach and seal it. I think that is kind of what Nelson should kind of be disappointed in, not the referees for this one. And then to kind of, you know, to concede after going up a man is even worse. But like I said, I think overall the play was pretty good for what we're used to seeing over the last few seasons with TFC, and I thought it was a sign of things to come. They looked like a playoff team.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And the fact that they were able to hang with the reigning league champions for as long as they did and really push them, and even when they went down, I mean, they really went for it. I mean, you know, for me, that's a positive sign.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a positive sign. It was, you know, but looking back at that game, it's also a game that you think they have to get 3 points in when you look at the schedule coming up. So I think that's what maybe made Ryan Nelson, you know, more disappointed than anything, is those 4 games on the road at Montreal, BC, Columbus, and back in Kansas City look a lot more daunting now when you start to look at the table. They still got games in hand. So overall, I think at this point in the season, they're about where I thought they'd be when you consider all the new additions and really kind of having to come together as a team still in the, during this early part of the season.
You alluded to it there in your comments. There were 2 contentious decisions in the game. The first coming midway through the first half when Colin appeared to pull down Gilberto, only to see the referee wave play on. And then in the second half, Duro was brought down by the Brazilian KC defender, who was the last man back. But he was only given a yellow and not a red. First on Colin's foul on Gilberto, should he have been sent off?
Well, all right. So at first look, I thought it was a foul. And then the in-stadium big board actually played a replay of that and zoomed in. And I actually thought Colin actually kicked Gilberto's back leg. And then after the game, they showed a bigger replay of the incident. And, you know, I didn't change my mind. I thought it was a penalty. The reason I think it's a penalty, too, is because I don't think Gilberto is that kind of player to go down when he's clear on goal. I think he definitely felt something. Referee Ted Uncle waved it off. I thought it was a missed call. It was surely a 50-50 call. Right. And it should have been an easy call for him to make, I think, you know, especially in front of home support. And it wasn't, you know, either Gilberto sold it really well or it was a penalty. I thought it was a penalty. On Adoro's, when he was brought down in the second half, definitely a yellow card. The reason I don't think it's a red card is because of the location of the foul and where it took place. I thought it took place a little bit too far wide. If you look at the ball, it's kind of rolling along the edge of the area. He's facing, you know, the end line rather than the goal line. And I thought Kansas City had a few players that might have been able to cut down the angle a little bit. And they had plenty of players retreating. So I thought the referee actually got that one right.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's... I think people throw around the term last man back and they think that means an automatic red, but it doesn't. I mean, it's a clear and obvious goal scoring chance has to be prevented. That's according to the laws of the game by FIFA. And you're quite right. I'm not sure that, you know, it was a clear and obvious choice because Oduro's, he still had a lot of work to do after that.
Yeah. And I think referee has to be absolutely sure on those decisions when giving a red card. Because those are incidents that change games. So if there was any shadow of a doubt in Uncle's mind on the Aduro one, he has to give a yellow there and not a red. That said, I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to convince me that the one on Gilberto wasn't a penalty or wasn't a red card and a sending off. just knowing the player Colin is too, I thought it was a late challenge. I thought I saw him whack his leg. So a big call that I think could have changed that game even more.
Mm. Well, I think with regards to the Oduro call, I think you and I are in the minority because most people seem to think it was a straight red, including former Mayor David Miller, who was chirping us a little bit on Twitter last night.
Yeah, but you know what? Those are, you know, the fans look at the games a little bit differently than you and me, I think. I think you and I kind of see it through a neutral lens, and sometimes the fans, they have their beers, they have their peanuts. They see the game a little bit different from the vantage point they are on the stands when we have a kind of a view from up above.
We're talking Toronto Sun reporter Kurt Larson here on the Soccer Central podcast. So despite the loss, the Reds still sit third in the East, a bit off the pace of front runners KC and DC, and only a few points ahead of the trailing pack, although they do have games in hand. Do you like the position that they're in right now?
If they weren't playing as well as they are, I mean, I thought they played pretty well on Saturday. If they weren't playing the way they were, if they weren't fighting, if they weren't creating chances, I'd like it a little bit less just because they're starting to slip down into that 4-5 kind of area.
Right.
With the road trip, as I mentioned. But just because of the way they're playing and how they're fighting for every inch, it seems, and I think Bradley's starting to play a little better, and they're missing Defoe at the weekend, you know, with Defoe still scoring goals, I think they're in a pretty good spot when you consider they have two games in hand on most of the East, and their away form hasn't been all that bad. So now come September and October, I firmly expect them to be at least solidly in the hunt, if not, almost a shoo-in to get into the playoffs this season. And if they aren't, if they fall short of that goal, then something else is wrong. And this is a team that needs to be in the playoffs and probably should with that roster.
You've been touting Gilberto all season, and I don't think anyone could dispute that he's a good player and he does those things off the ball that, you know, you don't always notice or don't always give credit for. But he does only have two goals. Has he met expectations so far?
I mean, he's met expectations on everything except for the goals part, and that's what he's paid to do. But that said, I mean, there's been talk and rumblings of Gilberto possibly being, on the trade board. There are teams interested around the league, I've heard. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bezochenko in the front office looked into those to see if they could clear a DP spot. That's not to say they will. I think they'll probably give him the year, but I know there are teams interested. That said, clearing a DP spot and sending away a player like Gilberto or only giving him a year, you're not guaranteed to get a DP in that's any more productive. I mean, you could sign somebody and they come in and produce less than Gilberto does. I think Gilberto offers so many things. I think he takes pressure off the foe to do the dirty work. I think fans are starting to like him a little more too. He was getting a lot of grief earlier in the season, but I think fans are starting to really enjoy his work rate. And he looked extremely excited when Jackson opened the scoring on the weekend. And I think that just shows you how much he wants to succeed in this league. His teammates love him. His teammates want him to succeed. They see the work rate in training, and everybody I've heard from is extremely positive about the player.
Well, I don't disagree with anything what you said there. I think, you're absolutely right. He does a lot of things off the ball that kind of opens up opportunities and space for Defoe. And again, no one can dispute his hard work in training and on the field. He does, he really puts in an honest day's work. But again, it's, the fact that he's, a forward and he only has two goals, and it's more the fact of the money. I mean, he is taking up a DP slot. He's eating up, some cap space with that. I don't think those two considerations aren't inconsiderate.
Yeah. Inconsiderable. Let me just add one more thing.
Sure.
I think we can look at the goals and the lack of goal production, but at the same time, if we kind of break down that Kansas City game a little further, maybe he should have had Colin sent off or he's in on goal on that one play. He also sets up the Oduro through ball that could have had Jalal sent off. He played that ball to Oduro, and he had that cross to Jackson at the back post that Jackson somehow missed from, 2 meters. So he's doing things that make a big difference in games or possibly could. Maybe it's bad luck. I don't know. We'll see where he is at the end of the season, though. I can't say you're wrong to say that he's kind of disappointed in a way, but I also think, it might not be smart for TFC to get rid of a player like that, especially when you consider what guys like a Rudy have done and Laba have done when they sent these guys away because they weren't the kind of DPs they wanted.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I do think you have to give him at least to the end of the season and probably even a little bit of more of the 2015 campaign, because I think to write him off Before that would just be foolish. Because as you said, you brought up a good point. And Aruti, I don't know if you saw the game against Montreal yesterday. He played pretty well, and he's done quite well in Portland since going there.
Yeah, I mean, TFC can't keep sending away guys that do well in the league. You know, they've done an excellent job bringing in players this season. They've won almost every trade in my eyes, where they've gotten, you know, what they wanted out of every trade. So I just think, sending away a player that's actually, for me, producing, despite not scoring goals, would be a mistake at this point in the season.
You mentioned winning trades. They brought in Warren Cravall, sending the top pick in the allocation order to Houston, who turned around and got DeMarcus Beasley. I think some fans were a bit disappointed that they were only able to get, a second-string defensive midfielder for the top pick. But I don't know. I mean, they already had three DP slots filled, so it was either going to, do something with this pick. Realistically, I don't think they could have gotten much more, do you?
No, because everything I've heard from that situation is the key to that trade was making Houston believe that Toronto might actually select Beasley.
Right.
And in order to do that, I think Toronto had to threaten to trade a guy like Gilberto or to trade away some big pieces. And I think they might have done that behind the scenes and said, hey, we're not against making some big moves in order so we can find Beasley, this World Cup veteran. And I think that ultimately is what actually convinced Houston that they needed to send a pretty serviceable player to Toronto in order to get that pick. So I don't think TFC was ever going to sign Beasley, but it was a matter of convincing Houston that they just might.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What have you made of the job Bezbachenko has done this year as a rookie GM?
I mean, you can't say he's gotten much wrong. We can point to the Laba deal, and Laba's doing so well in Vancouver, and a lot of fans are still disappointed in that. But the situation there was so confusing with Bradley kind of arriving late and that deal coming about in a matter of weeks. So we can't really blame him for that deal. I think he's done everything he said he was going to do. I think he's along with Ryan Nelson, because Nelson's had a hand in some of these moves.
Sure.
I think, they've set up the team to succeed. I think they at least have the personnel on the field now to succeed and finish top three in the East. And like I said, I think come season's end, if they don't, then they might have to look at something else and see what else is going wrong and see if they have kind of the right personnel elsewhere.
I wonder if this might provide a model for other teams in terms of looking for a new GM, going to, within the league and hiring someone who has, knowledge of the league and all the contracts and stuff like that, like Bezbachenko did. Because so far, I think he's done a pretty good job with Toronto. Is there a lesson in this for other clubs, possibly?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If I was Montreal right now, if I was Joey Saputo, I might be calling up. I might be calling up my arch nemesis in Toronto and asking Bezbachenko who his best friends were over at the league office to see if any of them might be interested in joining my staff. Because Montreal, of course, is underperforming, and I think their head of operations, DeSantis, the fans there aren't happy with what he's done. They've really done nothing since last year. I mean, this is a playoff team in Montreal, and they've won three of their last 20. How do you make the playoffs and then go and then drop off that much? So, yeah, good. I mean, it's a good point. I think it might be a model. See who's in the league, see who knows this league, and can pull strings in New York and maybe get him into your front office.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, because as I said, I think Tim has done a pretty good job in his rookie campaign, and he's done a really nice job in terms of building this side and bringing in some key pieces. Listen, good stuff, Kurt, as always. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk soon. We're going to talk a little North American Soccer League and the Ottawa Fury now. Chris Hoffley is the Fury beat reporter for the Ottawa Sun and joins us now on the line from Montreal. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for coming on. 12 games into the NASL season, Ottawa has 3 wins and 2 draws. Evaluate us for us how the Fury have performed on the pitch overall.
Well, I think it's what a lot of us expected for a first season with a brand new franchise, and that it's had its fair shares of ups and downs. It's not as many wins and not the positioning that I think the team would have liked to have finished in their first spring season. But there's definitely been some highlights and definitely been some obvious spots where they want to improve. But so far so good, I think overall. And I'm trying to regroup here, and they're trying to get going for the fall season.
You mentioned there's some obvious spots where they want to improve. What might some of those areas be?
Well, I think for anyone who's watched the team in the last few games, the most obvious one is trying to figure out a way to put the ball in the net again. They've gone the last few games anyway, and I think going back to the last game of the spring season, they haven't scored at all, and that includes a friendly against the Glasgow Rangers last week and their last match this weekend where they got pummeled pretty good in Carolina. So I'm not really sure where that scoring's gone. To be perfectly honest, it wasn't as much of an issue in the spring season. They managed to have a few games where they really, really, really exploded with some good offense. But they're in a bit of a funk right now, and it's almost seeming like it's starting to become a mental thing a little bit. So I think once they manage to pot one, hopefully in the next match, it'll start rolling along for them again.
The team currently sits eighth out of 10 sides in the overall standings and is 6 points out of a playoff spot. In light of, you know, you talked about the offensive problems they're having, realistically, do you think the Fury can make a serious push for a playoff berth down the season stretch?
They're really going to have to kick it up a notch if they're going to do that. I know talking to the team there, they're still optimistic. They still are shooting for that top four spot on the table. But you know, as I said, they've got a couple. You know, the midfield really is where it's really, things are really good right now. And their head coach Mark DeSantos has said a few times that he thinks that the midfield is one of the best in the league. Obviously, on each of those sides, they've had some issues. They let in 3 goals against Carolina, so there's a little bit of work to do on that. Back line and again the goal is just I think it's just a matter right now of getting a few more connections in that attacking third, and they certainly have the power and the player talent on the squad to do that, but I think they're just getting into their own heads a little bit. So as far as a playoff push goes, it's going to be a tough one. They're not making their lives any easier on themselves right now, but if they can get one going forward here and maybe get a string of few together, then things might start looking a little better for them this year.
What have you made of the job that Mark DeSantos has done as coach this season?
Well, I look at it, you know, I've been asked that question a few times and look at it from a few different perspectives. I think from a media perspective and covering a new team, they couldn't have done any better bringing him in the sense that he's someone who's really passionate about growing a sport in Ottawa that hasn't had pro soccer before. So he really makes effort to go out and talk about the team and not kind of minimize his answers to questions and not speak in short clip sentences all the time. Really considers himself an ambassador for the sport in Ottawa. I think they couldn't have done better in the sense that he knows the game as well as as well as anyone they could have brought in to be the leader on this club this year as a coach, and he's proven that with the players he's been able to bring in from different parts of the world. He's obviously a really well connected guy. He's obviously a guy that's really well respected by his players, and he speaks 4 languages, and I think that covers all the mother tongues of all the players on the squad. So from that point of view, I think he's really what they needed for a new club that's trying to get people interested in the sport here.
What about results on the field? I mean, has he done enough with the talent that he's had at his disposal?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a little bit early. I think he's certainly got a lot out of some players that maybe people weren't expecting to see much from this year. You look at a guy like Carl Hayworth, who played in Ottawa before on the PDL team, and I don't think anybody expected him to come in at a training camp and challenge for a starting spot, and he did that, and it seemed like that was just him getting going throughout training camp and really progressing quickly, and all of a sudden you've got this local guy who's playing who's playing a regular spot in the starting 11. And so I think with young guys like that, Mark has so far, I think, done a pretty good job. I think there's a little bit of work to be done yet in terms of getting some more production out of a guy like Tommy Heineman, who's really going to be leaned on to get that offense going, and some of those experienced guys, and they're really going to have to figure out a way to light a few fires there.
We're talking to Ottawa Sun reporter Chris Hoffley here on the Soccer Central podcast. Chris, from a player perspective, who on the roster in your mind has really stood out this season?
Well, as I mentioned, a guy like Carl Hayworth coming in and winning a spot in the starting 11. If you look on the back line, I think you don't have to look much farther than a guy like Mason Trafford, who has played, if I'm not mistaken, still every minute of every match that the that the team's been involved in so far, and he's just been a force at center back. And you know, you don't see a guy like him going anywhere. And I think again, Marcus Santos obviously knew the player he was getting when he brought Trafford in. He was kind of a late signing in during training camp, but for someone like myself who wasn't familiar with him, and I know I wasn't the only one, to see him come in and just play the solid style of play that he has, especially in some matches where there's not a lot of. There hasn't been a lot of good things going in a few different games at Trafford on the back line. There's been kind of a steady and constant presence, so he's really, really impressed.
How has Toronto FC defender Ryan Richter done at Ottawa since he joined the club on loan earlier this season?
Well, from a little bit I've seen, I think he's gonna be a good fit back there. He didn't get the start he wanted on the road, and then was sent off on two yellows fairly early in a tough match and a pretty questionable call. I think most people would say look at the tape on that one. But I think he's some buck piece that they needed to bring in, and I think get him in a couple more matches, get him a bit more training time with the squad, and he's going to be a really key piece back there next to Trafford.
How, looking on matters off the pitch, I'm interested to know how the city has embraced the club.
Oh, you and everybody else. It's it really depends who you ask. I think you look at the almost 15,000 people that were at the opening Fury match at TD Place when that reopened at Lansdowne. That obviously shows that there's interest. A lot of those people, I think, have probably never been to any soccer game in their life that didn't involve bringing orange slices out to their kids at halftime. So I think that's great to see. It's a learning curve for sure, how to be a fan at a live soccer match. But I think it's not as easy as a sport like football or soccer. There's a little bit more education involved. But to just let people know there's a pro soccer side here now, and to come check it out. And I think it's going to grow. There's a couple really good groups of the official supporters groups that are really kind of banging their literal and metaphorical drum as much as possible to drum up that interest. And I think as that starts to spread and people start to see the excitement that soccer can be when you see it in a place like TD Place, especially, that it's going to start to grow. But it's a slow process, and it's the first year, so I'm trying to be patient with everybody else.
What about and you'll forgive me because I haven't been following the club as closely as I should, but what about the media coverage in the city? I mean, obviously you're doing your part with the Ottawa Sun, but just in general, I mean, do you find that they're getting much coverage?
There certainly could be more, and I know the team would certainly love to have more. It's definitely picked up since they moved out of their temporary home at Carleton University, where they played the spring season, now to this new fancy stadium at Lansdowne. So I think that, you look at the media that was there for the first game, and it was far and away more than would have been, on average at a Fury match at Carleton. So I think that's picking up both because of the setting and the fact that more people are noticing just as a result of moving into the new stadium. So I think there's, media as well has got to learn the game. There's not a brilliant soccer mind at every outlet here. I certainly wasn't. It's certainly been a learning experience for me along the way. So as everyone else, it's picking up, and it's going to grow, hopefully.
As you mentioned, earlier in the season, the club was playing at Carleton University, but they recently moved into the brand-new TD Place Stadium downtown. They set the league attendance record a few weeks back when they had 14,593 fans in the stadium for the game against New York. Can the Fury sustain that kind of interest, or was that a one-off, do you think?
Well, I think having 15,000 or 14,000 people at a game every game is, right now, I don't think is realistic. I don't think anybody expects that. I think what you're going to see more is the kind of crowd that they got out for the friendly against Rangers FC last Wednesday. And that's a midweek evening game. There's a lot of Rangers fans, but for the average person tuning in, it's a friendly, so it's not counting for any points, and they still managed to get, I believe it was, 8,000, between 8,000 and 9,000 for that. So I think that for right now is probably a realistic attendance expectation for the team, and I think they'd be happy with that. But certainly if they can have a few important matches there that can draw upwards of 12,000, 13,000, 14,000 people, that would be the best case scenario. But I don't think that'll be the regular or the norm until this the interest grows a little bit more and people get a little bit more on board.
How did the Ottawa Fury fans embrace the midweek friendly against Rangers? Because it's interesting, when you compare it to Toronto FC, obviously a large part of their fan base was pretty vocal in their dislike of the Reds playing Tottenham last week, feeling mm-hmm. that it distracts from the, from the playoff push and from, stuff that really matters. But I don't know, this is obviously Ottawa's in a different mm-hmm. situation. They're trying to build a fan base. They're trying to grow the game a little bit. I'm curious to know how, the hardcore Ottawa fan would have, thought of that match.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think in Toronto, it's a bit of a different story when you're in a playoff race and you're looking to make that push and maybe having that extra game in the middle of the week, tire some guys out might not be the best thing. But in Ottawa right now, I think if you told them they had to play four friendlies in a week before playing a competitive match on the weekend, I think they'd suck it up and go to it because they know how important it is right now to get people involved. And the fans were great, against the Rangers. So many Rangers supporters worldwide, and a lot of them from within driving or spitting distance from Ottawa, made the trip, and it made for a good passionate bunch at least of the stadium for that one. It was fun.
And maybe they pick up some of those Rangers fans as Fury fans.
I think so, and I think you saw a mix of both. I talked to a dad and his young daughter who were there with, they had Fury jerseys on, but then they were wearing kilts, so they were trying to find a mix and match their support. And they said, we sat there and we cheered for both sides for the whole match. So I think you'll see some of that, especially Fury supporters who got to see, Rangers supporters who got to see TD place for the first time. And I know a lot of them were really impressed with that. So if it means them coming back to just to see the stadium and taking a Fury game, I think that's okay too.
What was the what is the experience like at TD Bank Stadium? What kind of a facility is for watching a soccer game?
It's I think it's exceeded most of our expectations. Everyone knew we were getting a world class sporting facility of one kind or another, but there was a lot of concern, especially from the diehard soccer fans early on. What would the lines look like on the pitch? What would would it be a football stadium with soccer as an afterthought? And it really hasn't been that. They have the paint on the field that comes off, and so there's no football lines for a soccer game, and it really looks like you're just in a world-class soccer facility, and that's why people keep bringing up, say, well, when are we gonna get an MLS team in Ottawa? We've got the stadium for it now. And you've got the other side saying, well, we just got this NFL team here, so let's take a beating, be patient. But that conversation just shows you just how nice this stadium is and what a big get it is for the city.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Listen, Chris, before we let you go, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can check out some of your work.
Yeah, well, I'm, as I said, I write for The Sun, so you can always go over to ottawasun.com. I usually have a column in there on days of the Fury train and on game days, and otherwise I'm all over social media as well, on Twitter at Chris Hoffley. I've got some pictures on my Instagram feed at Sun Sports Hoffley.
Good stuff, Chris. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and keep up the great work.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Just a reminder that you can watch Toronto FC at DC United in MLS action live on Sportsnet 360 on Wednesday night. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern. Also, Sportsnet continues its coverage of the Guinness International Champions Cup with high-profile friendlies involving Manchester United, Real Madrid, Liverpool, AC Milan, and other big European clubs. Go to sportsnet.ca and consult the broadcast schedule for more details. And I'll be back next Monday with another edition of the Soccer Central podcast. Until then, cheers for listening.